Welcome to another episode of Straight Talk with Strahan.
Hey, it's Odie Strahan, and I'm having one of the most amazing days of my life. Hopefully you are too. Let's get this show started.
What's going on? Welcome to another episode of Straight Talk with Strahan. Guys, we are in for a treat. Really fired up about today's guest. Today's guest is the former head men's basketball coach for Sacramento State, who had a phenomenal coaching career that spanned over 40 plus years. He coached at every level from middle school, high school, junior college, you know, as well as D1, as I had mentioned with Sac State. Really looking forward to hearing about, you know, his life since retirement, but really excited to discuss the book that he just released titled The Road More Traveled, A Coach's View from the Bench. Brian Katz, welcome to the show.
Odie, awesome. I'm excited. This is it's going to be a fun day. I'm really looking forward to talking to you.
Absolutely. And, you know, I got a lot of stuff I want to get into. I'm really, really excited about this book, but I want to get into a lot of other things prior to that. So let's get right into it. But first and foremost, I wanted to say just congratulations and give you your flowers, man, on a great coaching career. Like I said, it lasted over 40 years. Success at every level. Included Big Sky coach, co-coach of the year in 2015, as well as being inducted in, you know, in the California Community Men's Basketball Coaches Association Hall of Fame back in March of 2009. So you've had a plethora of accolades, of course, and man, I just want to say congratulations on, you know, on a great coaching career.
Man, I really appreciate it. You know, this is it all comes down to your players. I had fantastic kids that were fun to coach that made you want to get out there every day and you know, it inspired you every day. And there's no coach that ever had success didn't have great kids and great players. So I owe it all to them. I love everyone. They've been fantastic.
Nah, that's amazing, man. That's amazing. And I know they you know, they feel the same way, you know, towards you. As I had mentioned, you know, you were able to coach at every level. Cause I, from, you know, from middle school, high school, junior college, D1, let me ask you, what are some specific things that you enjoyed most at each level?
You know, I think, like, start off the bottom. I think junior high and freshman and sophomore, you really learn how to teach the game because you got to teach everything from the ground up. So in terms of a fundamental based program and learning, it's a great, great, great environment to learn. Then as you go up, I love the JC thing because I felt like it's a second chance and you really, really can make a difference with guys. Typically, if you get them, they lack either the academic background or they're not physically ready. So you're kind of like the fix-it guy. And it was so rewarding when maybe a guy comes in and he's either physically immature or doesn't have the academic background. And then when he leaves, he does. And for him to go on to four-year school, and I'm really proud of this, we had 115 guys over my 19-year career in junior college, and 109 out of 115 went on to four-year schools. In other words, only 6 guys did not advance to and get their degree at the four-year level. So that is really rewarding. I love that. Then the Division I thing, I just think always about – you know, developing people and players and all that kind of thing. I loved that the players were now, they're men, they're mature, they're 22, they're 23 sometimes. Some of them are young coming in, but also the challenge to compete at that level is off the chart because everybody at that level as a player is really good and the coaches are really, really good. And so, I mean, there is no room for error. I mean, it is on. So it's the best of the best, and that's exciting.
I could hear how at each level there was different, you know, aspects of it that brought out the passion, you know, for coaching. Probably also had to, you know, gave you different challenges as a coach at each level. Let me ask you this: was there a specific level though that was your personal favorite?
Junior college, because I just felt like just here's a good example. Take a guy like Phil Ritchie. He came in and people say to me, oh my God, you know, Phil Ritchie, you did a great job with him. You know, and I say, well, look, he'd have been a Division I player no matter where he went. The basketball part for him wasn't really it. The part that's super rewarding was he came in as a non-qualifier and a remedial student and he left college ready and went on and was very successful in college. And that part, when you feel like a young man comes to you and he's kind of stung from the first time being in high school and not getting what he thought he was going to get. And now you can help him achieve that. Oh, it's awesome. It's a great feeling.
No, you know, I could definitely see that, like the JUCO, like you had mentioned earlier, it's a second chance, right? Because they're there for a reason, for the most part. I know it's different these days when it comes to a lot of the factors we'll talk about. I know we were talking about it before we started here, but it does give players, you know, whether it be academically or even, you know, on the court, a second chance. Let me ask you this. That being said, what do you feel is the biggest difference in the game from the time that you started coaching and from when you retired, what, 2-3 years ago?
I'd say real simple. Back in the day, you just told a kid how to do it and go do it. Now you have to, I think you have to start, you have to teach them the how, but you also have to teach them the why. And I don't think that's a bad thing at all. I've always believed, even back in the day, for example, let's just say you're going to teach a kid how to jump stop, passing footwork, pivot away from the defense. You need to explain why he understands it and can apply it. But more so, I've always believed that, because then the young man will buy in more. But nowadays, more than ever, this generation's used to asking why, and that's okay. And I think that you have to be very clear. You're just not going to tell some kid to do it. He's just going to do it. He's got to be motivated to do it through your passion and also for you explaining the why when you teach it. I think that is the biggest difference. And again, I always make a joke about it. It's not like, hey, why are we leaving at 8 a.m. tomorrow? I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about like, well, now, coach, how come you want – I want to be clear on this. Like, coach, how come you want to make sure on our threes that the ball touches the paint first, goes in and out before we shoot it? Like, why? That's a good question. Like, that's a fair question. Okay, here's why. Because you want to get the defense scrambled and moving, and we also believe that if you're stepping – toward a pass that comes from the key, you're stepping directly toward it. Now you're going to have momentum. You got a better chance to make a shot. So, you know, you explain the why. And the more you explain the why, the more the young man will buy in.
No, that makes perfect sense. It sounds like maybe when you first started, they were just more instructional. It's just, that's what you say. That's what they do.
Yeah, I think it was a reflection of our society. It was kind of like, I started coaching 1976-7 season was the first one for me. Ironically, though, actually before that, I was 11 years old. I coached my brother's fourth grade team. But so anyway, but you just tell somebody to do it, they just did it. And I think this is where I think in some coaches can get thrown off. And, you know, even myself as well back in the day was, why do I have to explain that? But then you kind of go, wait a minute, you're the same way. You want to know why you should do something. And it doesn't mean it's threatening or defiant. It just means it's going to allow the young man to be more committed. Like the example I just gave, if you explain it like, no, look, when the ball moves and touches the paint, goes in and out, you got a better chance to get a great open shot because the defense is playing closeout basketball. They're chasing the ball around the infield. You're going to have a better chance to get open. Plus, you're moving toward the basket. And you have more momentum, more rhythm. That makes sense. And then the young man, when he sees that, he buys in. He works harder to that end. He's more committed and he's more successful.
And you know what? Kudos to you to being able to adapt, because, you know, a lot of coaches that had, you know, your type of tenure, not everybody's able to adapt, you know, with the ways, you know, and the days, you know, they just kind of get stuck. And not necessarily that's a bad thing, but, you know, it's probably makes the process a whole lot more difficult. But you were able, you know, to see how things change, and just want to definitely give you credit on that. Now, I know it's impossible to name everything. But what would you say, you know, I had mentioned a few of your accolades, you know, when we started, but what are some of your proudest moments or accomplishment as a coach?
You know, honestly, I think, you know, a couple things here. One, the 109 out of 115 kids matriculating on from junior college, I've got, you know, to me, that means so much to me. The other part, too, was, you know, at Sac State, every one of our players graduated except one. We had a 98% graduation rate. You know, we actually got recognized by the NCAA 4 years in a row for one of the top 10% in the country. Now, that's off the court. But to me, ultimately, at the end of the day, that's what these guys are going to be doing, is life after basketball. So I feel great about that. You know, the other part on the court. Okay, we were the first team in the Division I era to get win 20 games at Sac State. We won the first playoff game in 54 years. We were we beat three Pac-12 teams. We won the most games in the conference over in a particular year, 13 games, and I can't remember the year, 14, 15, at any level. You know, all those things are great, but Odie, what I would say is this, like, the only reason those things matter, and I really believe this, is because it gets your players to buy in to your core values and what you're selling. And what I was always selling is academics. So they kind of buy in, and you try to always relate what you're doing to the, like, the battle on the court, to the battle in the classroom, to the battle in real life, and life after basketball. And that's why I've always said, you know, I'm an educator first, always will be. I always believe that. The accolade, like, for example, just take Delta, for example. I don't know, we won 70 or 80% of our games. Like, we went lead eight four times, this, that, and the other. I don't know how many championships win. The winning only matters because then they're going to buy in. For example, if you're not winning, it's hard for the young men to buy into anything that you're selling. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And more importantly, you created scholar athletes. I don't even like to call them student athletes, scholar athletes that were prepared based off life principles, not only to obviously use that, which you, what they learn on the court, but as well as off the court, because you're going to be playing off the court more than you are on the court.
I couldn't agree more. And I think this is the part where it gets a little, I think we all struggle with this a little bit these days with the transfer portal and the NIL. It's like, that's all great, but we just don't want to see all of us, I think, see education devalued. Because at the end of the day, you know, for example, I had 10 or 12 guys still playing overseas right now that I coach. You know, I worry about them a little bit. I go, okay, they're making good money, they're doing good, and they have degrees, which is awesome. But when they're 35, 36, 37, and they have no job experience other than basketball, what's that going to lead to? I worry about that a little bit. Now, the safe haven there is they do have a degree. You know, all those guys graduated. So that's great. I worry in the long term that this thing is going to lead to young men not graduating, which ultimately the pendulum always swings back and forth one direction. But we all know education is a big deal. It's a really, really big deal.
No, it makes sense. And, you know, you've led, you know, like I said, with the numbers. The numbers are irrefutable. My goodness, when it comes to, you know, graduation rate, and that's something to really, you know, hang your head high on, just as much, if not more, than anything that you've helped these guys on the court. So, no, I love to hear it. Actually, those are all amazing numbers and stats that you just spit off. That was just amazing. Well, let's pivot, man. I'm excited. Like I said, I just wanted, you know, for some of the listeners who maybe aren't as familiar, you know, with you, a little backstory on your coaching, but I want to really pivot and get into the new book that just released, The Road More Traveled, A Coach's View from the Bench. Let's get right into that. So where did the idea of the book come from? Was it something that you always had in mind, you know, back in your mind that you always wanted to do, you know, like a book that you want to write?
You're going to die laughing. The day I retired 2 years ago, I'm not good. I've been out 2.5 years, November 5th, I believe it's 2000. What is that? 22? Might've been 21. I sat there and go, it just came to me. I started reflecting on all the players I had. I started writing down their names, just how much I really appreciated all they'd done for me, how much fun I had coaching them, how important they are. I go, you know what? You should write a book. And in the introduction, I'm really clear on this. It's a tribute to all of my former players over a 45-year period. And I said, you know what? Why don't you write a book about them? And so it started off like that. And what it turned out to be is I chose 10 stories. First, it was going to be 10 stories, 10 individuals. But it turned out to be it's 10 different stories. One of them is about two players, Sam Kirby and Chris Walker, because they were a duo. One of them is about three guys that played for me at Sac State. Travis Jackson, Eric Studeville, and Nick Horns, and it's called The Three Dinosaurs. It's the last chapter of the book because they came in as freshmen, didn't know each other, roomed together for 4 years, they're best friends for life, in each other's weddings, all the above, and they all graduate. And I say they're the dinosaurs because the odds of that happening anymore with the transfer portal and the NIL are, you know, slim and none. So the others, eight chapters, are all individual chapters. For example, there's one on Mike McKinney. There's one on Derek Clark. There's one on Dylan Gary. There's one on Phil Ritchie. And they're not necessarily the best players, although some of them pretty good, obviously. But that their story to me was just so uplifting and incredible. And, you know, like the byline was on the books is 13 players, 10 stories, one coach's view from the bench, countless lessons and memories. Well, I just felt like in the telling of their story, there would be great examples of leadership, mentoring, and also parenting, because there's some stories in this book in regard to parents and how they handled situations with their kids that are just, well, one, they're just so uplifting that you just go, how could you not? I actually had a line in the book on Mike McKinney's dad, Frank McKinney. Mike ended up being, you know, just a fantastic player for us and still playing pro ball overseas. And I got a line in the book that every kid in the country would have been a great, would have realized his ability had he had Frank McKinney for a parent. Because during the time, Frank worked with us rather than against us. And when I say that, he supported me in every way and everything that I did.
That's so amazing.
I started off with that. And then it turned out to be, you know, again, it's a total of 13 kids talked about, although along the way, some other names come up. And my idea was I want to tell the stories, and whatever comes up in the telling, if another player's name comes up or another coach comes up, I want to talk about it. But the main thing is to come back to their particular story and just how amazing they are and just how uplifting they are. And just, I just don't think these stories get told enough. I think, you know, they all went on, graduated. They just, it's just, and again, the proof's in the pudding. When you read the book, there are some stories in there that they'll just warm your heart. I'm just telling you.
Absolutely. So I know you said it's first thing you thought of, or one of the first things you thought of, you know, after you retired, which actually would make sense if you're reflecting on your career. And obviously, you know, what made it great, and it's the people that were a part of it is what, you know, was the real blessing behind it. So that makes sense. Talk to me about how long it took you to actually write the book and the whole process as a whole, putting it together.
Took a complete year to write the book. And then that was the easy part. Then it took a year and a half to, you know, it's everything from getting waivers signed to the cover to dealing with publishers to this, that, and the other. So it's 2.5 year process, 2.5 year. And I'll tell you, there is no way you and I were making fun of me at the beginning about how technologically challenged I am, which is no understatement on that, let me tell you, or overstatement what I'm trying to say. The technology part really tripped me up. And if it weren't for my kids, and particularly three in particular really helped me, my daughter Megan, who's in Manhattan, New York, and then my son Steven and his fiance Amanda Titus, if those three hadn't stepped in and helped me, oh, it would have taken 15 more years to get through it.
It's a family affair, man. Family affair. Like you said, the book covered 13 of your former players over 10 chapters. You know, you coached throughout your career, also at different times, you know, obviously some of them, you know, while you're at, you know, JUCO and, you know, and then at Sac State. Let me ask you this. What was it? Cause you know, you had a plethora of players throughout, you know, 40 plus years of coaching. What was it about these specifically? I mean, I know there's actually a couple of chapters I want to go into a little bit without giving too much away, but what is it? What was it about these specific players? Because I can only imagine how many total players you had in your coaching career.
Well, I start with a kid named Jesse Satterfield. The story's called A Direct Miss. And it's an amazing story. Here's a young man that was given up at birth, and then his father died when he was 13. And the catalyst for him to come to our place is he's from Southern California, and he had three gunshots fired at him. And one hit the wheel, one hit the tape deck, one hit the steering column. And so as a result, he just said, hey, I got to make a change. So he came up from Southern California to Stockton, and I'll never forget this. He brought his aunt and his minister. And I have never, ever, in the book, I say he had brought an entourage. It was a bit intimidating, his minister. And I'm like, this is unbelievable. I've never. And so right off the bat, you're going, okay, I better pay attention here, because this kid, I mean, they're driving all these hours in this heat to get this kid up here. So the big line for me is you sit and you interview the kid and you find out he's got a horrible learning disability, not a very good student, barely graduated high school, So I said, I described how difficult it was going to be. I went through the whole thing. I said, now, Jesse, why would you want to do this? And he said, and he looked me in the eye, and I'll never forget this, to make a better life. And I thought, it wasn't so much the way he said it. I looked into his eyes. I could feel his pain, and I could see his seriousness and his desperation. I thought, okay, this guy's a guy that's going to really buy in. He's really going to be committed. And again, Odie, he wasn't the best player. He started his second year. We had to redshirt him a year because of the academics. He was 6'2". He came in about 165. And truthfully, he's a five man. He wasn't skilled. But what he was a great teammate. He could really communicate. He would really listen. And he really had a great ability to make everyone around him better. And so here's a kid that I called him a C-list guy. I wouldn't even call him a B-list guy. Kind of took him as an afterthought, redshirted him. 3 years later, he's starting, and he's a really good player because every time we put him in the game, the ball moves faster. People cut harder. People work harder to get open. They play defense more. They communicate better. It's kind of like the X factor, the intangibles. He had all of those things, and yet overcame this. And again, his learning disability is very severe. To get his college degree and is now a teacher down in Southern California. So that kind of story is one that you go, like, he didn't average double figures in his career. He wasn't an all-league player. But boy, his story is incredible. I'll tell you, it's incredible.
Quick break here. Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but we'll get right back to it. I would like to take a moment to introduce Angie Verduzco with eXp Realty, your go-to realtor for unparalleled expertise. With a track record of guiding investors to lucrative properties and making dream homes a reality for house hunters, Angie brings a wealth of experience to the table. Fluent in both English and Spanish, she ensures seamless communication. Explore the Yuba, Sutter, and Sacramento markets with confidence. Follow Angie on Instagram at Angie Verduzco Realtor. Again, that's Angie Verduzco Realtor for a glimpse into your future home journey.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's, I was fortunate enough and blessed by you to have the book in advance. Having got to that one makes me want to definitely, grab that one next for sure. Talk to me about some of the commonalities that each of these players had. I know everybody had their own different stories, their own adversity. They had to overcome different challenges. But what were some of the commonalities amongst the 13 players in the book?
I talk about this a lot, and it's the X factor in recruiting and coaching. And it's this. I would say the general statement I would make is, and it's a secret sauce. It's hard to figure it out, but they all had a term I like to use, deep inner confidence. Now, what I mean by that is they had the ability, like, here's a phrase I use in the book, and I like this phrase a lot. It's things turn out best for those that make the best the way things turn out. Phil Ritchie's a good example. I tell a story in the book about how he has a game when he gets 38, and he just tears it up, the whole deal. And the next day, it's a day of a tournament, and he goes in the first four minutes, he gets two fouls, he comes out. I don't play him the rest of the half because we start on a run. I don't change things. Second half, he starts. We get way up. We're up 35. We got a game the next day. He plays like a total of 8 minutes, has 4 points. I look down at the bench, and I tap my assistant on the shoulder. I go, which night do you think Phil had more fun, last night when he had 38 or today when he played 8 minutes, had 4 points? He goes, it's easy, tonight. Well, Phil was rooting for every teammate. He was running down the end of the bench, grabbing water, sitting on his hands and knees, serving these players. And here's my point. You have to have deep inner confidence to understand this is really good for these guys. This helps our team. This helps our morale. And you know what? My day's every day. Like, I'm player of the year in the state. I'm getting 20 a game. You know what? Everything doesn't have to go my way every single day. I really believe that is a huge underrated skill in the game and just in life, that you have the ability to go, you know what? I got to be able to trust my teammates. I got to be able to trust my coaches. And again, not have everything go my way every single time and still have a great attitude no matter what. And I just think it's deep inner confidence. And I think that these 13 guys all really had it. I really believe that.
That's a really remarkable story because, as you know, not all star players are necessarily the greatest teammate. I mean, do you disagree with that? I mean, I've seen some star players, I mean, that wouldn't necessarily have reacted or done what Phil did, which is, like I said, which makes what he did even more amazing with that story.
You know, and this is why I wanted to tell these, because I think these are incredible stories, because you to your point exactly. I mean, Phil was a player of the year in the state. Phil was a national recruit. Now, let me tell you two things more on that. The start of the game before, they're not double teaming him, which is unheard of when we were in junior college at any level to double team him. You had to if you had a chance. They weren't double teaming him, so it was just like a layup drill. He got so embarrassed at how many he was scoring, he started throwing the ball out, even though he had one guy on him. And now we're turning the ball over, and they're starting to come back. I called Phil, score the ball, or you're going to make me do and say things I'm going to live to regret. So that's one thing, because he always wanted his teammates involved. He was an incredible passer, and he never wanted it to be only about him. And wait till I tell you about this. Next week, March 14th, Phil Ritchie is going into the Junior College Hall of Fame down in Southern California. And this is a big, big deal. If you were to Google the California Community College Hall of Fame, the names on it would blow you away. 80% of them are NBA guys. And I will tell you this, the number one most prominent name on the list, I could give you a million guesses and you'd never guess it. The number one most prominent name in the Junior College Hall of Fame that Phil is about to join men's basketball in California, the Jackie Robinson.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. He was a four-sport star at Santa Monica Junior College before he ever went to UCLA, before he ever, you know, was a great player and did what he did and went on and broke the color line and all the above. So for Phil, and here's what I always try to say, like, Phil also, like the guys in this book, they would allow people to mentor them. They would allow people to mentor them and listen to the right people and not get dissuaded and thrown off, you know, by, I'll just call it all the outside influences, you know?
No, that's amazing. I know Phil's super humble guy. He actually did send me out that, he sent like a video when he found that out. But super humble. I've sent, you know, Phil has a great training program right now, and I've sent, you know, a numerous amount of, you know, families and kids to him, you know, and I don't really think they really realize, you know, how great Phil was until I sent him some videos. They're like, man, you know, cause they just know him as a trainer, but super humble guy. And that's really, you know, just really great to hear. He's going to be joining an elite class. I look forward. Maybe, find my way out there and be able to see that great life moment for him.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but I do want to throw this in as a point of what a great teammate he was. A whole bunch of teammates are going down there for this thing. I mean, there's Cash Reyes is flying in from Pennsylvania. I mean, this is the kind of teammate he was. And so, you know, no shock. I always say when your best player is your most willing passer and has the best relationship with everybody on the team, and magic can occur. You can catch lightning in a bottle. And we did with Phil.
Absolutely. Let me ask you this, hearing about these players, I know, you know, they had a lot of them had a lot of challenges that you were able to help them, you know, overcome. And so I know you had a big impact on their lives, you know, on and off the court. Let me ask you this, though. How did these players impact you as a person as well as a coach?
Way more than I impacted them. I'm telling you right now, I'm very specific in the book. And I actually have a line. I'm going to read it to you from the introduction just because I want to say this right. And I really believe this. It 100%, here's my line. I'm going to read it. It says, "While I hope I played a part in their growth and maturation, there is no question in my mind that they helped me far more than I ever helped them." And I really, really believe that. And my line is that I'll read one more line. "I can honestly say that while basketball coaching shaped me, my players inspired me on a daily basis." Odie, it's not even close. Not even close. They did way more for me than I ever did for them. They affected me in ways I can't even describe it. It's just, it's incredible. And I think that's the beauty of coaching. And honestly, teaching that you get so much given back to you. And if you're paying attention, you can really, really learn a lot. I mean, I learned a lot from a lot of these guys. I'll tell you.
I think that's the thing that's special about having that great coach, great mentor, whether it be sports, business, whatever it may be, you know, a spiritual mentor, is that, you know, you're able to teach them so much in whatever craft that you're expert at. In this case, you're a coach. So you're, you know, obviously you coached them up, you helped them out, you know, through the academics and what have you. But it's really what I find is really the so special and the big blessing is the relationships it's built. You know, here you are. I mean, some of these guys, you probably what coached, I don't know, what 20, 30, 40 years ago. And there's still, I could tell there's still a relationship there. And you're probably one that stays in, you know, constant contact, you know, consistent contact with these guys. And I know one thing, because I was pretty fortunate enough to know a handful, I think half of the 13 players there. And anytime I mention your name, and I mean, this is a straight talk, is you could tell they're full of admiration and the actual respect that you were able, you know, the value you're able to, you were able to provide for them in their life and the impact that you made. It's just really, really is a big blessing.
Oh, it's the greatest profession in the world for that. It keeps giving back. I'm out of coaching. It keeps giving back. I mean, I'm probably, I don't even want to give a number. I talk to 5 to 8 to 10 to 12 players a week. Many of them are still coaching. Many of them are not. Many of them ask me a question about their life or they're in coaching, their assistants or whatever. You know, take an example like Derek Clark. He's the first one in the book. Here's another fun story. He's a kid out of Foothill High School. My first ever college recruit, 1989, when I became head coach at Lassen College. I was there 89 and 93. He was there for 3 years with me. He's the first chapter in the book. And Derek is now, he's going to go into the Metro State Hall of Fame on April 20th of this year. And again, for both of these Hall of Fame events, my wife and I are going to fly in. So it's what's awesome about it all. I still have a relationship with Derek. We talk, text, you know how it goes. And it's just incredible. And that was like, what was that? Like 89, however many years ago that was. But he's the first ever college recruit that I had. And he went on to fantastic things. Was a great player at Cal Lutheran, played overseas, was an assistant at Metro State and became the head coach there and had unbelievable, incredible success there. So you just, hey, you surround yourself with good people. Good things happen to you. That's all I'm going to say.
No, I can only imagine how good that is for the heart. You know, I coached AAU basketball for 6 years and then got out of there, you know, good friend of mine, Randy and I coached and we were great retention, especially the AAU world these days. I think we lost maybe 3 players in 6 years, which is unheard of. Right. And so a great group of kids, scholar athletes too. So I'm proud of all, you know, all of them and being able to see them now, you know, now they're juniors. It's just amazing to see that development, you know, and just knowing that, you know, you had some form of impact, you know, on their lives. And that's a small sample size, a small window, you know, compared to what you've been able to, you know, not only the amount of people you've been able to help, you know, but the amount of lives that you're always a part of. You're forever a chapter in their lives, you know. And like I said, I can only imagine how, you know, what that does for the heart on a daily basis.
Oh, it's just incredible. It's like, I mean, I just can't really properly expressed it other than the fact that, like, again, here I am done coaching and you still have guys that look, and I'm not bashful, I'll reach out to them too. I don't play this, oh, the coaches, well, they need to reach out to me, I'm the coach. No, I reach out to them. I want to know how they're doing. I don't have any problem doing that because, again, I really am very, very interested in what's going on in their life and in every part of it and whatever they want to share. And you know, that kind of thing. I loved it. I loved, like, I went out and watched Phil Ritchie's son play Pop Warner football. I love to see my guys with their kids, those that have kids. I love to see that. I love to see them, you know, that whole thing. So it's incredible. It keeps giving. And it's one of those perfect. Here's what I always say about it. Coaching is a calling. You don't choose it. It chooses you. And it's a little bit like the priesthood. If you can get out, you probably should. If you can't get out, you know you're destined to do it. I just don't ever remember thinking about anything other than that. And I think that the players that I've been around, just incredible. Real quick about, I want to give you one deep interconference confidence story that pops out. So Chris Walker, there's a story in there, him and Sam Kirby, great players at Foothill High School, led him state title, this, that, and the other. I don't want to spoil it, but there is a part in the book, and this is where you talk about learning from people. Like, this is a great thing that I learned. So we went down, lost to Diablo Valley in the Sweet 16, Chris's freshman year. He was on the line, up one with 8 seconds to go. He missed both free throws. They came down, hit a shot at the buzzer, and beat us. Okay, season over. We're 22-6. We won the league, had a great season, but devastating when he loses the season. Okay, Odie, he was my student assistant, and he left his diary for his English class in my office. And I don't know why, and you can call it nosy or what you want to call it. I flipped through it, and I came to the entry of that very day. And here's what he said, word for word. I thought, oh, this is going to be ugly. He's going to talk about how he lost the game. He goes, yeah, we lost in the playoffs today. Got a lot of work to do for next year. Can't wait. Now, here's what I learned. Really good players don't beat themselves up, and here's why they don't. Because they know how hard they're going to work at the next practice or the next offseason or the next game to overcome it. And here's the key point of all I learned. They improve faster because they don't beat themselves down. Now, and I learned that. Like, personally, I went, you know what? I knew Chris, and I knew that he burned inside. It was fire on the inside. Like, it killed him to lose. I know it did. He didn't have to jump up and down and scream and yell, and he didn't do that. But the point I'm making is, as tough a loss as that was, he quickly cleared the slate and moved on to the next thing. And I went, that's why some players improve faster than others, because they don't get bogged down on all the negativity. You know what I'm saying?
No, that might sound very simple, but that's a good word. I mean, that's just the perspective on that is amazing, you know, because a lot of people would, you know, hang their head on that and let it impact that, you know, moving forward.
Oh, he didn't. And listen, it was amazing. And there was no sign of emotion. And I know, look, here's what I say about Chris. The fire on the inside burns hot. On the outside, he's ice. He's not going to give you much. Like, he's going to play like, this is the highest compliment I can give guys. And there's some guys in the book that are like this. Up 20, down 20, you wouldn't be able to walk in the gym and tell by their body language, because they're going to put their – you're going to feel their presence. They're going to be committed to the game no matter what. They're not going to have a lot of negative energy, negative attitude, the whole deal. And I really, like, honestly, like, I learned from Chris. I go, you know what? You do that to yourself, Brian. You beat yourself up sometimes when you make mistakes, and then you carry it too far, and it kind of holds you back. Because, again, we all know it's about energy. It's either going to be positive or negative. You got to quickly learn and then get rid of that negative energy. And Chris was the king of that. He was fantastic. So I learned that from Chris.
I know. And he was definitely part of a magical backcourt, you know, with Sam. And, I mean, you see the success Sam's having as a coach. Were we able to follow him along this year at CRC with the girls' team?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I went to a couple games. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's amazing. It's so fun to get there and see his family there and sit with, you know, it's so funny. I laugh because let me get this right. His nephew, Michael Kirby Jr., plays for Wood Creek. And I always go up to their parents, Sam Sr. and Carmen, who are in the book, by the way, and tell them, I become like every other parent now. I walk up to coach at Wood Creek, your ribs, and go, I just say, hey, is my grandson playing or not? Michael Kirby Jr., my grandson, is he playing? I'm only here to see him. So I laughed because I walked up and I said, well, now I'm here to see my son. Sam's playing, Sam's team. You know, so I sat with Carmen and Sam Sr. It was so much fun. He is such a great person, the whole family. But Sam Jr., and I'm going to talk about him for a minute. What an incredible person. What a great example and role model and father and coach. It's unbelievable. And those two as a duo, their record for over, and again, I don't know if you know the story. They coach, there's a whole chapter devoted to them. It's called Cold-Blooded Winners. They coach, they play together from seventh grade on every single year, through junior college. That's like longer than the average marriage. I mean, like 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 1, 2. Their record, I couldn't even go back and figure this out. They won at least a championship at every level except their sophomore year. And their sophomore year, they did make the playoffs in advance. and do well. But their record over the last 2 years of their junior, senior year, their 2 years with me at Delta was 116. And I always have to say this out this way because people, they say, you say it fast, they get confused. 116-15. 116-15. Their junior, senior year at Foothill High, their freshman, sophomore year at San Joaquin Delta. It's incredible. That's incredible. I mean, it's almost 90%.
All they do is win. All they do is win.
That's why we titled the chapter Cold-Blooded Winners. And, of course, Chris went to Oklahoma, and they went to the NCAA tournament. Sam went to Seattle. They went to the NCAA tournament. They continue to win. I mean, it's – and Chris, as a coach, they've gone – he's at Cal State Fullerton. They've gone to the NCAA tournament. I mean, the only time Cal Poly ever went to the NCAA tournament, Sam was an assistant there. So, Cold-Blooded Winners. That's the name of the chapter.
And that's all they've continued to do. I actually was going to before we close it down. I actually was going to go into a couple of the chapters, but we spoke about quite a bit of them. So I don't want to spoil the book. But I did want to talk about a trio that you mentioned earlier when it comes to the three dinosaurs with Eric, Nick Hornsby, and Travis Jackson. And especially with Travis, as you know, really good friends with his family and got to know Travis throughout the years. In fact, we had heavy communication when he was just getting drafted and went out to the PBA. Obviously, finished his first year at UC Santa Cruz. Talk to me about that dynamic, because, like I said, what about those? Like you said, that is definitely an anomaly. The fact that you come in the same class, leave 4 years, and you're right. I mean, every time I've seen pictures of the weddings, they're in each other's weddings. What made them so special?
Quick break here. Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but we'll get right back to it. Hey, are ants invading your home? Are you seeing roaches outside? Did you bring more than just memories home from that hotel you stayed at during your last vacation? Those pesky little bed bugs attached to everything? Well, I would like to take this moment to introduce you to someone that can help, and that's Ultra Elite Pest Control, locally owned and operated with over 15 years of experience, servicing Sacramento, Elk Grove, Gulf, and surrounding areas with next day appointments readily available. Enjoy $50 off your first initial service. And check this out, 15% off regular services with a 1-year agreement when you mention Straight Talk with Strahan. That's right. Call or text Antonio Torres with Ultra Elite Pest Control at 916-905-3345. Again, that's 916-905-3345. And don't forget to mention Straight Talk with Strahan. Call today.
How much time do you have? It's incredible. Let me just talk for a minute about, I don't want to short any of them, and I don't in the book. But let's just talk about Travis, unrecruited. Really has no opportunities. This is described in the book. He comes up. I tell him, look, you're never going to get a rep in the first 2 years. No way. Don't ever talk to me about getting a scholarship. I said, we'll work you out. It's not, it just is what it is. If you want to do that, fine. You'll be on the scout team. You better be seen and not heard, the whole deal. I mean, holy. 2 years later, I put him on scholarship. At the end of his sophomore year, I'm throwing him into games with the game on the line. I put him And my staff, you're crazy to do this. I put him into a game with 5 seconds on the clock. He had not played the whole game. We're up one. We need to inbound the ball, get a guy who's solid, who can catch the ball, get fouled, make free throws. He got fouled, went to the line at Idaho State. Bing, bang, made them both. We win by 1 point. I mean, win by 3 points.
Coach, that was at the Nest, right? That was a home game.
No.
No, it was a away game. Okay.
At Idaho State. But he – so, and here's the guy who's on scholarship. And by the time he's a senior, he's our sixth man, and he's a captain. So just start with that. But those three, what I would say is the thing that made them so special is they really were like-minded. They were so team first. They would, like, as captains, I'm going to use the term commiserate or meet, talk, develop strategies. They had their pulse. They were their hand on the pulse of the team. They understood that, like, for example, I always say this about Nick Hornsby. He was great at knowing what everyone else needed. Really good. And then Travis, of course, example of him, just incredible leader. It doesn't shock me, he's in coaching now. And then Eric Studeville, just a quiet competitor, so tough, but so committed to his teammates and just, you know, big, tough guy with a big, big heart. And I've gone on and on about Eric's threshold for pain. It was incredible what he would play through. But these three guys, they were like-minded. They had a real love for Sacramento State, a real love for their teammates and the game itself. And they were all three, I use this term too, obsessed with the game. And I really believe at this level, a player dedicated is not good enough. They have to be obsessed with the game. I mean, I have a story in there about how we had to practice at 5 a.m. because the only time we get to the gym consistently. About how Eric would text me at 4 a.m. and go, "Where are you, man? I want to get in and get some shots up. Where are you at?" I'm not kidding you. For his first day of college, 5 a.m. workout, he texts me at 4. "Where are you? How come the gym's not open?" How about that?
Nah, that's amazing. And, you know, like I said, I got to know, you know, Travis throughout the years. And the story you said, he echoed that as well. I remember him telling me, I mean, obviously he doesn't pass the eye test, that, you know, he was there as a walk-on, that he was told he would never, you know, never get scholarship. And the belief level, you know, and the confidence within himself to just keep pushing despite all that, that to me says, you know, says a lot. And then, you know, to be, you know, obviously one of, I believe it was the fifth pick, you know, for the, played in PBA in the Philippines for, you know, obviously what, yeah, 3-4 seasons.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at his career stats, you look at Travis Jackson, he averaged 2.6 points a game for his college career. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. it's not exactly what you would, think a pro player would average. He gives hope. I mean, but his confidence is just amazing, though. That's the part that, like, his it's irrefutable that he, his belief in what he could do. And like I said, I just love talking to the guy. In fact, I need to have him back. I was actually text messaging him actually this morning. You know, I need to have him on the pod and talk about his first year in coaching at UC Santa Cruz. But go ahead, Coach.
Deep inner confidence. Again, Chris Walker, deep inner confidence. And the example was one example. Phil Ritchie, deep inner confidence. Travis Jackson, to have that kind of confidence. I mean, the first workout he ever was in, he's on the side. I told him, "You're not getting reps." He's coaching his group. He's coaching. These guys are 3 and 4 years older. He's calling timeout. And I go, "Okay, I'm going to let him call timeout." And it's constructive and it's smart. And then his team came back and won, and he didn't play a second. I mean, I can't describe this. How about how he backs up Marcus Graves? Marcus Graves starts over him every single year of his career. How about that? And then Travis, I asked Marcus, "What changed for you when you were struggling early?" He goes, "Oh, that was easy." He said, "One day I made a play. Travis was more excited for me than I was. And Travis is my backup." And he goes, "But yet when he plays against me, he's going to kill me." He said, but aside from that, he's coaching me and mentoring me and helping me. So again, I talk about this a lot in the book. There's great example, like Odie, we're talking straight talk. I didn't want to write a book on how to do anything. And I didn't want to write a book about my life. I don't think that's interesting. I don't think there's a point to that. I wanted to write a book that through the telling of it would give great examples of leadership, mentoring, and parenting. And I think there's numerous examples in this book of that. And that with Travis is just one. It's clearly described in the book about how does a guy come into a gym 18 years old and have the confidence to, "Hey, time out, get over here, guys. Look, here's the problem." And the guys listen. Like, cause they just, I can't. Don't get me going on Travis. I could talk all day.
That's amazing. So I know, like I said, the book just released. Right now it's on Amazon. They could get it. Once again, The Road More Traveled, A Coach's View from the Bench. I know they just put in your name, Brian Katz, they'll pop up. Let me ask you this, last couple questions before we end with my, you know, rapid fire Q&A. I like to end my episodes with is, you know, any specific goals? Cause you can hear the passion in your voice about these stories. Cause you believe them. You've seen it firsthand. You've seen these lives come, you know, all the goals come to fruition when it comes to all the testimonies, what these guys have been able to overcome. So I can see there's good reason why you're passionate, but any specific goals you have, you know, for the book itself?
No. Here was my goal. I wanted to write a book. It's already been achieved as of today. And by the way, it rolled out today. On the day I'm talking with you, Straight Talk with Strahan. So this is March 5th. Hey, man, it's a great day for it to roll out here. And So bottom line is I wanted to write a book and I wanted to honor my former players and I wanted my family to read it. My family is mentioned in the book and the part they played in my life as well. And my parents too. So I wanted my family and my players to read the book. And I said, if anybody else reads it, great, but no big deal. So, you know, I didn't write this with the idea that, oh my God, it's got to be a New York Times bestseller. Now, I'm not going to tell you if people want to buy it, I'm not going to say, you know, you shouldn't buy it. But my point was, it was a labor of love. It was something I wanted to do. So as far as I'm concerned, the book, it already achieved what I wanted to achieve just by being released. And I'm super, like, Odie, just real simple. Like I told our players, I said, like the guys in the book, I said, you need to understand something. This is going to be something you can read as a family. Your players, your family's going to see this. They're going to be able to know your story. And my kids, they'll go, Dad, we didn't know what you were doing. We had no idea. You know what I'm saying? We didn't know what was involved in coaching. We had no, we thought we knew what you were doing in coaching, but we really didn't know.
I can already tell throughout, you know, this whole episode and based on everything you shared on the book, coaches, that it's going to literally create a lot of value for everyone that reads it. And you know, just, you know, being able to, you know, really pick up and learn through the testimonies of the stories, as well as a lot of principles. I know, I mean, even for me, I'm going to go, you know, go back and listen to this. And there's a lot of many things that you had already said and, you know, through the stories that I know I'll be able to apply myself, because everybody should obviously continue to grow as people. And I know, like I said, I really do feel like, and I'm not saying this, you know, because I'm biased, but I really do feel like the book is going to have that type of impact on folks, and be able, obviously, as well. It's something special that you guys were able to share with those 13 individuals, and obviously, and everybody else that was mentioned in the book as well. It's more than 13, of course. And I honestly, I'm really excited to see the type of impact. I think it's going to blow your mind away on the amount of feedback that you're going to receive on what some lessons that they really learn by just strictly being able to read about all their journeys and all the testimonies throughout the book itself.
I really hope so. And again, real quick, it'll be up and running the next day or two. The website is coachbriankatz.com, coachbriankatz.com. It'll be enacted tonight or tomorrow, but they can order it on Amazon or go to the website, coachbriankatz.com. So there's my shameless plug, right?
No, you're good. No worries. And you know what I'll do is, in the details of the episode, I'll have the website there. So make it really easy for everybody listening. You could just go ahead and click on the link there under the details of the episode. Just click on it and you know, we'll go from there. Well, I can't let you get going, Coach, without, you know, my usual rapid fire Q&A. Some just fun, you know, Q&A at the end. Nothing too deep. Just first thing that comes to your head. First one is, who was the most challenging but most rewarding player you ever coached?
Man, let me think for a minute. Might be Mike McKinney in the book. There's some challenges there. And I, matter of fact, they're really explained in the book. Yes. Challenging, but very rewarding. Yes. Yes.
Gotcha. Man, probably one of your most prolific scorers too that you ever coached, right?
Oh, no question. No question.
All right. What do you miss about coaching the most, being away now for about 2.5-3 years?
The relationship, practice, and the relationships day to day. That's it. The relationships day to day. Being able to text a guy and say, hey, come by the office. Let's go through a few things on film. You go through it, you look, but you're always going to get to other conversation too. Just the relationships. It's incredible.
If you had to use one word to describe your coaching career, what would it be? One word or one phrase, if one word's too hard.
I just say extremely satisfying. Extremely satisfying.
That's awesome. Let me ask you this. What's one place, like I said, it's kind of random. What's one place that you haven't visited yet that you'd want to go to?
Shoot. I haven't been around the world that much. We went to Great Greece last year. That was about the second time I've been out of the country. How about Italy?
Oh, nice. Okay. I haven't been to Italy myself. There you go. I'll give you another one too. you should put I don't call it bucket list, I put live list. Put Perth, P-E-R-T-H, Perth, Australia on there. I think you and the family would love
that.
It.
I've heard that.
Perth, Australia. All right. One last one here, which I think you've kind of mentioned, you kind of answered this throughout, but I mean, just want to end it with this question is, why should everyone get the book, and what do you feel everyone will leave after reading the book?
I think that they'll be very uplifted by the guy's stories, and I think that there are some lessons along the way. Again, leadership, and it not like, again, that's what I love about the book. It's not a how to lead, but through the stories and the examples of leadership that are explained, you go, oh my gosh, that, like, I could go on all day about the stuff, examples of leadership that those, like Jesse Satterfield, what I learned from him, he didn't try to lead for a year and a half. You know why? Because he was trying to figure out what the culture was, what the right things to say and do were, yet he was a natural leader. So I have a phrase, and I use it in the book on Jesse. Sometimes the best leadership is knowing when to follow. Well, that applies to all of us.
Like, that's good.
Don't go in there and just try to tell everybody what to do. You don't know the culture yet. So, you know, I would say there, through the telling of the stories, great parenting. And there are some stories of great parenting. Trust me, the Walkers, the Kirbys, Kevin Bland's mom. There's great stories of parenting in the book, and leadership and mentoring. I mean, I was in the recruiting process. And also, if anything came up, the way these parents, you know, supported their kids and while supporting me as well.
Well, Coach, listen, I just want to thank you, you know, obviously for coming on the podcast. I always, you know, enjoy talking hoops with you. I mean, I probably have you on once a week, to be honest with you. We can talk hoops, you know, all day, but I want to thank you honestly for giving me, you know, the book in advance. You know, like I said, definitely look forward to, I know you gave me kind of like a trailer on all the chapters. So I can't wait to, you know, to get in there and really finish the book, have it be the first of my, you know, 20 plus books I read this year, but definitely. And I just thank you for your time, for, you know, coming on, and just really excited once again, you know, for not only you, but as well as the, you know, the players that's highlighted in the books and how their stories is really going to be able to impact, you know, countless lives. Like I said, you have no idea who's going to be reading this book, and you know, and you know, who's going to really be impacted in a positive way. But like I said, just want to thank you for everything.
Hey, I really appreciate you having me. I really, really appreciate that. It was great to be able to interact with you as always. And thank you so much. I'm so impressed the way you've grown your business. And the main thing is, hey, it's a passion. It's fun. So you're doing something fun, like I was doing that something. I always just say this, like, coaching to me was like, this is success. If you can work hard at something, you work hard to have fun at something, which is what you're doing, which is awesome.
Absolutely. Well, guys, listen, you know, want to thank Coach coming on again, the podcast, The Road More Traveled, out officially right now. You can get it on Amazon. Coach Brian Katz, give it a few days, maybe next couple of days or so, you could order it from there as well. But I just want to thank you guys for joining me for another episode of Straight Talk with Strahan. Continue having a blessed day, guys. God bless.
Thanks for tuning in to another Straight Talk with Strahan podcast. And if you haven't done so already, click the subscribe button and make sure to follow him on Instagram at Strahan, Strayhand. And we will catch you on the next episode.